Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. As always, we start with the good news. And, Dan, there's a lot of different opinions on the sequester. If you listen to President Obama, we're going to have planes falling out of the sky and no cops on the streets and all sorts of horrific things, classrooms with no teachers. If you listen to most Republicans, they say this is unfortunate how these spending cuts are being appropriated, way too much on the defense side, but this is better than nothing, and it's the Democrats' fault that we didn't pursue what we wanted to do, which was more balanced cuts across the board. Then there's folks like Rand Paul who are a little bit worried about defense, but ultimately he says this is pretty much a pittance. In fact, in many cases, it's not even a spending cut at all.
What we've said all along is that the sequester over 10 years is a cut in the rate of increase. And even over 1 year, where there's a little blip where spending goes down in some departments, there are many ways you could do this without even really losing any jobs.
So he talked about not replacing retiring workers. He talked about paying federal workers at private sector salary levels. He talked about cutting foreign aid. But even though this is just a small piece of the puzzle, this was one of my favorite parts. He was on Greta Van Susteren's show, and she asked him about giving the president some abilities to move money around so the more important priorities got covered. And here's what Rand Paul had to say about some of the programs he's okay with the president scrapping if he wants to.
In the military, they had $5.2 million they spent on goldfish, studying goldfish to see how democratic they were and if we could learn about democracy from goldfish. I would give the president the authority to go ahead and cut off $5 million in goldfish studies. I'd give him the authority to cut off the $1.5 million that was studied to study roll-up beef jerky last year in the Pentagon's budget. So, yes, I would give him more authority if he's willing to use it to cut off some of this nonsense.
And then he goes on to say he's not confident that the president would actually use the authority in the right way. But, Dan, a little bit of comedy there, but looks like he's got his head screwed on pretty straight here.
I would characterize my position and National Review's position as somewhere between, say, Rand Paul and the rest of the Republicans or some of the more prominent Republicans who are talking about these cuts. There are going to be some painful cuts in defense. These cuts could have been designed better across the board. They could have been more targeted. We could have given more leeway to department heads to allocate the cuts. But overall, he's absolutely right. I mean, we're talking about, just consider the following two things, Greg. We're going to be spending slightly more in 2013 under the sequester than we did in 2012. Now, that's because of the entitlement programs that make up 60% of the budget are not getting touched barely at all. And also consider that there's only about $75 billion in scheduled cuts in the sequester for 2013. But because the government is so bad at slowing down its rate of spending, only about $44 billion of that money will actually physically be cut this year. They just can't cut fast enough. The government is too efficient to stop spending fast enough. So some of that $75 billion will actually spill over into fiscal year 2014 and some of it beyond. So we're really talking about a 1% decrease in the rate of increase, as Senator Paul put it, in federal spending. And that is not the end of the world.
On to martini number two now, and that's the bad martini. And Dan, especially in the wake of the Supreme Court decision last year that upheld Obamacare on a pretty flimsy reason that it's still a tax, even though the administration insisted that it wasn't, there are a lot of Republican governors out there trying to limit the damage to their own states. A lot of them saying that we're not going to set up the exchanges and saddle our taxpayers with that money. And a lot of them were saying the same thing about the expansion of Medicaid. But as the deadline approached, some very red governors in some pretty purple states have now decided that they are, in fact, going to go ahead with the Medicaid expansion. Michigan with Rick Snyder, Ohio, John Kasich, and most recently, Florida and Rick Scott, who basically made a name for himself fighting Obamacare. They've either decided that they need this to get reelected because not expanding Medicaid would make them look very, very mean towards the poor, or what have you. There's a lot of different analysis of whether this was smart or not, but bigger government and soaking the taxpayers across the board with more fees and taxes is not exactly something that most conservatives are going to be happy about.
Yeah, it was really unfortunate to see Rick Scott's decision for the reason that you mentioned. Kasich's bad and Snyder's bad, too. There's a couple things going on here. One, the best chance Republican governors, there's 30 of them, were going to have to stand against this would have been working together. you know, standing as one, you know, and as Mario Loyola puts it on our site, when they don't work together, they're all sort of put into these individual prisoners' dilemmas where they don't know what the other guys are going to do, and they don't want to be the one left without a handful of goodies at the end of the day. And that's the really awful choice that this Medicaid expansion puts to Republican governors, is they can either aid and abet in the expansion of this really pretty ineffective program. Medicaid is one of the more, you know, in terms of social scientific studies, ineffective entitlement programs that there is, and it's rife with fraud as well. So you can either aid and abet this program, or you can leave your share of forcefully redistributed tax dollars from the expansion on the table. And, you know, Scott said something exactly to that effect. He said, you know, I'm going to do this because I don't want Florida taxpayers paying into this system and that money going to blue states. And in a short-term, kind of narrow interest way, he's got a point there. And of course, as you put it, also probably help him in his reelection just a little bit. But there are a lot of conservatives in Florida who feel pretty betrayed right now. And this isn't the end of the story, because ultimately the Florida legislature will decide whether or not any expansion is funded. And both those houses are controlled by Republicans, including the state house, which is run by a speaker, Will Weatherford, who's kind of an up-and-comer in conservative movement.
Yeah, that Speaker of the House position in Florida seems to be a nice little stepping stone. Marco Rubio's any guy, so we'll see what happens there. But
that's right. It's like Alabama for football players.
Well, and we'll see what happens here. You know, the feds insist that the states will never pay more than 10% of the Medicaid expansion, but we know how good a federal promise is on things like that. So
yeah, and to be fair to Scott, I'm, you know, still disappointing, but he did say that the way he's going to design it, if the feds renege on their promise to fund 100% in the first 3 years, the expansion would stop. Although, again, you know, he also said, oh, but we're not going to take Medicaid away from new enrollees, new poor people who are on the books. So who knows what that means? But it's a big mess.
Yeah, very confusing, definitely. All right, on to martini number three now. And earlier this week, as we've chronicled from time to time, guilty plea from former Illinois Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. for basically stealing from his campaign fund to the tune of $750,000, redecorating his house, misappropriating it in horrible ways. And his wife, Sandy.
The Rolex. Don't forget the Rolex.
Yes, the Rolex, moose heads, Michael Jackson's guitars. I think maybe they were elk heads. Sorry. His wife also pleading guilty to charges. Jesse Jackson could be spending four or more years in prison. And so you would think that the rampant corruption of a congressman would be something that folks, even at MSNBC, would not exactly feel really mournful about, but you'd be wrong. Here's the reaction from Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski, and Harold Ford Jr. following the report of the guilty plea from Jesse Jackson Jr.
Mm. That was NBC's Pete Williams reporting.
It's a sad story. Harold, you served with Jesse.
I know, as did I. It's sad. Know the family well. My prayers go out to his kids and to the entire family. And I hope there's another chapter
in his
life.
Hope they can turn it around.
Yeah. Remember that mournful tone when Duke Cunningham was discovered and Bob Ney and some of these other Republicans, Mark Foley? Because I sure don't.
Yeah, he hopes there's another chapter in Jesse Jackson's life. Well, I'm sure there will be, and I'm sure he'll do just fine as a lobbyist or maybe an MSNBC host, for instance, but you know, or a motivational speaker or whatever. But I really hope there's not another chapter in public service in Jesse Jackson's life. The regard that he showed for his, you know, constituents and for his donors is pretty low. I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised by this stuff, you know, because it's coming out of Chicago. And I have to say, you know, I don't give him credit for much, but it doesn't look like President Obama ever stole a bunch of money from his constituents, which actually puts him in pretty small, you know, a pretty small pool of Chicago politicians. So I'll give him that much, you know. But between all this corruption and, you know, Chicago being the murder capital of the world, I'm really surprised by these Rahm Emanuel considering running in 2016 rumors that are starting to percolate. But I'll tell you this, I'd much rather go up against Rombo than Hillary.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, his personality is extremely abrasive. As you mentioned, everything's going wrong in Chicago. So that whole, I can do for America what I did here.
It's a great line, yeah.
Probably wouldn't be all that effective unless you want dead bodies strewn all over the streets of America. So, good times in Chicago, certainly. Dan, have a fabulous weekend. Thanks so much for filling in for Jim. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Greg.
Daniel Foster of National Review Online in for Jim Garrity today. Please join Jim and me on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.